258 Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. Okay, we'll do the Rashi's now. Mizmor Shir Chanukas Hazamibul Chazir. We'll see how we'll do. Okay. Arimimcha Hashem Ki Delisani V'Lo Simachto Evayli. Arimimcha, I will praise you, Hashem. I will. The word Arimimcha obviously refers to a certain type of praise. There are many different expressions in Tanakh that are used to describe the praise of Hashem, and this is they're obviously selected with precision. What David is trying to say. When it comes to the inauguration of a new bayis, he's using the words "Arimimcha, Rom, I will exalt you, Hashem." You know, there's a halachic matter. We don't do this today anymore, but in a city, the no one is. I think it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. It's a Gemara Masech the Brachas. No one is allowed to build their home higher in height, higher than the Beis HaKnesses. The Beis HaKnesses. The Beis HaKnesses, if the Beis HaKnesses is two stories, no one is allowed to build a home that's three stories. The highest building in the city is the Beis HaKnesses. This is Gemara. And it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Obviously today we don't find that to be the case.
No, but churches and mosques copy that concept.
What do you mean?
Church spire always had to be the highest point. No building could be built higher than that. The same is true in Muslim areas.
Yeah.
You can't
build the higher the mosque.
Taller than the minaret.
So that is taken from Jewish law. The Beis HaKnesses has to be the highest building. So when you look at that
in the town in Monroe,
yeah,
they built the main basement, which was highest than the higher building was. That was the architecture.
Really?
The main Satna basement, which was only, they only allowed one basement, which actually, you know, it was a summer resort in the census bungalow colony. I used to go up there. So in the Satna town, when they built up a beautiful building, base measures is higher than all the other buildings.
That's the halacha.
And no one else was allowed to make it to be. Later on, they started allowing the little.
But that's the halacha. So it's very interesting. They follow the halacha.
Yeah.
But you don't see that in Flatbush. Practical reasons today, we don't do that. And today, part of the reason we don't give our shuls today is sanctity of the Beis HaKnesses. For many reasons, because we are unable to give it the kedusha that it deserves, because the Beis HaKnesses in truth is sacred, and there are many, many restrictions, many severe halachas that go along with the sanctity of the Beis HaKnesses, the Beis HaMedrash, and we know that we are not going to be able to adhere to all of these laws. Therefore, we don't even bother, we don't even try. We don't give our shuls the full sanctity. We call it a shul. A shul is a shtibul. A shtibul is a Yiddish word which just means room. We prevent it from having the full kedusha. It comes with a price. Now, when you don't give a makkah in its full kedusha, okay, we don't know how all of these things work in the spiritual world, but that affects the koyach hatfilah. Okay, the makkah counts. A mokum where you daven, where you learn, the location has significance. If the mokum is a mokum of kedusha, then it enhances the potency of your prayer. How that works, I don't have the slightest idea. But this is a fact. The fact is that a location of sanctity enhances the potency of a person's prayer. So today, it's a given that when a shul is constructed, it is not given sanctity. It's just a room where we dedicate to daven.
Don't we call it a mikdash ma'at?
To a degree, but not in the full halachic requirements. Because if a shul really had a kedusha of a shul, you would not be allowed to eat, you would not be allowed to talk. You, when davening was over, you couldn't make announcements and say, "Rabbi, don't forget this week is election day. Don't forget to vote." You can't say that publicly, to get up in front of the Oren HaKodesh to say that. It's a terrible bizarre. You're not allowed to go. What we do in our shuls today would violate almost all of the halachas of what a real Beis HaKnesses is. Therefore, it's almost a given that when a shul today is built, there's a tonight. The Tanai is that we don't, the Dafa, don't want to give the shul it's the full tekef of Kedusha, so that we should not chas v'shalom be nichshol and not treat the makom the way what it deserves. But there's a trade-off. There's a trade-off. Because we don't give our shuls the full potency of Kedusha, our tefillos are denied the potency that they really should have. Now, you'll say, what are you talking about? You come through, you daven, you shop, you close your eyes, you daven with kavana. I don't know. I don't know what it means. Obviously, in the spiritual world, if you go to a makom of Kedusha, it's different. How it's different, how it works exactly, I don't know. But it is. That's what our emuna. We don't have a choice. We are unable, as a community, to adhere to the stringencies of these laws. And therefore, we don't even give the Kedusha. And one such example is the fact that there are shuls that are built all over the neighborhood, and they're only one story. And there are people who build magnificent homes that are palaces compared to some of the shuls in the community. How are you allowed to do that? How are you allowed to have a person today, you go down the streets, you don't have to go very far, and you can come across some magnificent, magnificent homes, and the local shul with the people who live in that home, Davin,
so
who they call, this is my, where is your shul going on the Shidduch resume, where do they Davin? What is, so you have to put down, like, you know, that's the Muslim. Where do the parents daven? So they have to put down a shul, or three shuls, or four. Okay? Where do you daven? Who do you, even though they almost never daven there, it's just, you know, just everything is for show. Where do you daven? They put down a shul. Really? This is the shul, Shalom Aleichem. Welcome. This is the shul that you identify with. This is the shul. And wow, your home is worth a lot more.
Why are you taking that approach? Why not? There's one shul in Brooklyn that is Torah. That's it, you're covered.
You're like the Bar Dichtuva. You're always in Malamit, Tzchus, and Klal
Yisrael.
You're right.
I'm not a nice guy.
So what is the answer? How could you do that? How could you identify on your daughter's shidduch resume that this is the shul where you daven, when your home is far superior in every way and form than the shul that you identify with? It's worth a lot more. So what is the answer? The answer is it's not really a shul. We don't have shuls. We don't have shuls. It's that makom that I daven is built out tonight. There's a condition in that makom that it's not, does not carry the sanctity of a Beis HaKnesses with all of the laws that apply to it, the Din of the Gemara, which follows all the way down to Shulchan Aruch. You know why? Because exactly the point. The reason why my home appears to be very nice is there's another story behind it. Whatever the story is, it's not because Chas V'Shalom, I'm not Machshiv, Torah, Tzila. I'll prove to you I am. All of my children are sitting and learning. I pay tuition for Jewish education. You can build 10 houses what I paid the stock that I've given. Why is my home like this? It's a kasha. We'll figure out an answer. There are answers, and there are very good answers. But today it is a reality. But me'ikar hadin, a Beis HaKnesses has to be the most exalted makom in a community. Now, when you look at this mizmar, the word Aron Mimcha has a whole new flavor. Mizmar Shir Chanukas HaBayis Tadam. Let us assume that the bayis here is the Beis HaKnesses. The Beis HaMikdash. Or David is writing this mizmah, and this mizmah is traditionally said at the time of any Chanukah Sabbath. Now, but David wrote this in reference to the Machlokes. What is he referring to? Is he referring to the Beis Arozim, his private home, or is this mizmah referring to the Beis HaKnesses? Let's assume it refers to the Beis HaKnesses. Oh, the Beis HaKnesses, Aron Mimcha. The Beis HaKnesses is the most exalted. It's a halachic principle. The Beis HaKnesses is wrong. Wrong. It is above and beyond. It is the most significant makom in the community. This makom is the makom. This is a remnant. The next verse, I remember Hashem, ki delisani, ki you've lifted me up. Ki, we have discussed it. I will exalt you. I will praise you. I will lift you up because you, Hashem.
Because you raised me, Kidivitani, therefore I am going to the Harim Otcha.
You don't make deals. There's no, let's make a deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It was just on Friday. Okay, it's a kasha here. Okay, but there is a halachic principle here. The Beis HaKnesses is Ram. Ram means it is elevated above and beyond all other structures in the community. Now let's see the Rashi. Rashi over here, Shir Chanukah Sabayis. Okay, we'll go a little quicker so we'll run through this. Shayonru Halavim Chanukah Sabayis B'mei Shor. Rashi tells us, we learned some of these things before, just to review, a lot of these soilas come together in Rashi, that David HaMelech composed, according to this very important Rashi, who exactly composed this Mizmor? Who composed this? It says here, the end, Le-David. Does Le-David mean that David composed it? Or maybe what it means that Shlomo composed it, and Shlomo over here is saying that I'm dedicating this Mokim, I'm dedicating it in honor of David. Because David was the one who discovered its location through Nasan HaNavi. As we discussed, for 440 years, there was no permanent location yet discovered. The Shichloi Sidrishu Uvasa Shama. Okay, there are many, many factors. Klal Yisrael did not yet discover the permanent resting place of the Shechina. It's really very fascinating that the Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't say anywhere B'chol HaTorah Kula that this is where the Mikdash should be built. There is a mitzvah d'araisa of to build a Beis HaMikdash. It says Yosuli Mikdash V'shochanti B'soichan. You shall make for me a Mikdash, and I will dwell B'soichan within you through this Mikdash. This it says in Parshas Truma regarding the Mishkan. And the Mishkan is called the Mikdash. And it's coming to teach you that the Mishkan will eventually come into Eretz Yisrael and you will build a Mikdash. Nowhere B'chol HaTorah Kula does it say where this location should be. We discussed this many, many times, where this should be. And even the question of should there even be a permanent location? Maybe today after the Churban, almost 2,000 years ago when there was a Churban, maybe now when they build the Bayis Shlishi, maybe we should build it somewhere else. Who says that the Bayis Shlishi has to be built specifically in Yerushalayim? Maybe there's some other real estate in the area to show that's more fitting to build a new Beis HaMikdash. Where does it say in the Torah that there has to be a location, a permanent location, where the Shechina will rest? They traveled for 440 years in Eretz Yisrael, and they relocated seven times. They relocated four times in Eretz Yisrael. Gilgal, Shiloh, Noiv, Givon. And then the fifth time they settled in Yerushalayim. Who says that there has to be a permanent location? It's not anywhere in the Torah. It's like a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. It's a mesorah. It's a mesorah. And so that itself is a chiddush, is that there has to be a location that is the final destination. And after you're willing to accept that, then you have to accept the precise location. Who's to say that this is the location? We discussed this many times. David was the one that discovered its final resting place.
Abraham said it.
What? But who says that's the permanent location? But who says that's the permanent location? I mean, this will be a makom of kedusha. But is this will be a place of kedusha? We'll build a mizbeach. But who says this is going to be the permanent resting place? And also, there was a whole discussion that place that he discovered. Is that the makom hamikdash? A lot of rishonim is a whole bunch like this. Vayikra b'mod, the place where Yaakov Avinu the Evan Azoyis Asher Samti Matiya Beis Elokim, is that Har HaMoriah? Is that the Malkum? We take it as a given that this is the location. But not only all of the Rishonim accept that Malkum it was Har HaMoriah. So a lot of these things are up in the air. Yet the Mesorah is, we accept that yes, as the Talmud said, that was the Har HaMoriah. And there's a permanent location, and that base Yerushalayim Yachodesh is the permanent location, and it was accepted. Who is the one that achieved this result? David. Therefore, Shlomo, you could argue, and I think some of the Rishonim indeed say this, the one that composed this Mizmar, who says it was David? Who says it was Shlomo? Shlomo composes. And Shlomo said, Mizmor Shir Hanukkah Sabayis L'David. L'David, I dedicate this bias to David. My father David, he is the one that was Moser Nefesh to find and to discover this location. So Rashi says, you can say all you want to say, but I disagree. Rashi says that is my opinion, that this Mizmor was indeed composed by David. It has a very big nafkamina, as you go to the remaining psukim, that speak about illness and death and all of these different issues. The Shlomo HaMelech was Shlomo HaMelech Sedi. Yeah, he was. Shlomo HaMelech, he was Ashmedai. He threw him out. The whole narrative completely changes when you accept who is the author. You know, every time you learn a pasuk, you always start with the recite. Me Omar El Me. That's the first thing you have to ask every single time you learn the pasuk in Tanakh. Me Omar, who's the one who said this pasuk? Is Hashem speaking? Is Moshe speaking? Is David speaking? Is Esther Hamalka speaking? Who? El Me. And to whom is he speaking? So you can argue, the one, Mi Omar El Me, Shlomo Omar L'Chlal Yisrael. Mizmor Shir, Chanukah Sabayis, I'm going to give us, compose a song in honor of the dedication, the inauguration of the Bayis region, which is called Binyan Shlomo. Shlomo is the one whose name is on the Binyan. L'David, and we're going to dedicate this Binyan in honor of my father, David. He is the one that discovered the location. He is the one that received the Messiah, the blueprints. He is the one that actually laid the foundation. And spiritually, Bavur David Avdecha. It's only in his chus that we have this. So therefore, it's only proper that we should dedicate this in honor of David. That's a very valid approach to understand the entire flavor of the Mizmor. Rashi says, I disagree. Get it through again, Rashi says. The one that composed this Mizmor is David. And David, when he composed this Mizmor, there is no Chanukah. David never saw the completion of the Binyan. This Mizmor was composed of Ruach HaKodesh when the Mikdash will be completed and be built. I want you, my son Shlomo, whoever builds it, I want you to recite these psukim on the day of dedication. That's what Rashi is saying. Sheyon Ruhu, and who should say this? Not even Shlomo, Halevim. Bachanukah Sabayis, when the Bayis will be inaugurated, Bimei, in the days of Shlomo. Pasuk days, Arim Hashem with the Rashi, Arim Hashem.
By the way, it's not Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit, according to Rashi, it's Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit.
You're right, the word Shir and Chanukah go together. There's a message.
The Atzkor also put the connection, Shir Chanukat Habayit, B'lachat.
Right, it's called the Makoff. Makoff.
Mizmor
David. Excellent. Rav Kalman is saying unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable. What he's saying over here is, as we always do, never ever read a pasuk in order. Never read a pasuk in order. If you read a pasuk serially, you're in a lot of trouble. A pasuk is a riddle. It's a puzzle. It's a jigsaw puzzle. And you got to take the words and you have to unscramble them to read them to make sense. And what's the proof? The proof is there is a makof. What is a makof? A makof is a bar. And the word Shir Chanukas, if you notice in this pasuk, is connect. Part of the Mesorah. This is part of the Mesorah, is the makof. I don't think the Mesorah has a makof. I think the Mesorah is there's no truck. There is no ta'ameh ha-mikra on purpose on the word Shir, which means that the word has to be read together with the word Chanukas, which as a convention, in the modern world, I don't know when the printers started doing this, they put a makof. There's no makof in Mesorah. There's no trap. Just like there is a word for which we have a Mesorah, has ta'ameh ha-mikra, a musical note, we have a Mesorah that this word does not have a musical note. What do you mean? How could it possibly, there's no musical note? The musical note of its neighbor, of its neighboring word, is the new is part of is the music for this word. How do we indicate that in the modern world? The printers, they did us a very nice favor. They invented this thing called a makof. This horizontal bar along the upper part of the word. So the word Shir Chanukas is really one expression. So then how do you read it? So as Rav Kalman said, Mizmar LeDavid. I want to now say a Mizmar, a composition that was composed, who's the author? Go to the end of the word, the pasuk, LeDavid. What is my Mizmar? It is a Shir Chanukas Habayis. It is a song, a special type of song. A song of
Shir Chanukat
Habayit.
Talking about the title. Shir
Chanukat
Habayit, he says.
Right, because
and then Shayamu.
Shayamu Halavi Machanukas Habayit, Binei Shlomo. We're only focusing on the Shir Chanukas. What's the Mizmar of Kalman? The Mizmar LeDavid. Many of our Mizmar LeDavid. What did David compose? He composed a special type of composition that was meant to be sung at the inauguration, a Shir Chanukas of the Bayis. And who will sing it? So this is the whole Nupsha now. David is everything the same. Shachris, Mizmar Shir Chanukas, Mizmar LeDavid. Shir Chanukas, Habayis. Very good. Pasuk base. Arabim Hashem ki yusani Hashem hig bi hig batani. Okay, so Rashi here is telling us that the word ki dilisani, remember we have all the drush, is the word dilisani mean a bucket? Is the word dilisani mean a delis? Is the word dilisani of dal from the word poor? It's all related. So Rashi says the word dilisani means to be uplifted. Hig Ba-tani, you have uplifted me. Yeah, this is it means, okay, all the drush is all part of the same idea, but it means Aliyah means to be like a bucket which you lift up, like a person who's poor, who has now become wealthy, has gone from me-ashbois, yorim, hogwell. Me-ashbois, yorim, evyon, and we'll say where the apostle is looking for, dao. Hashem, he lifts up a dao, finally, he lifts up a poor person. It is just derech agav. Okay, this is just a little grammar. How do you say this word? You say, if you listen carefully, go around, go to God, and you listen carefully to all of your neighbors, how they say the word dili sani. Do they say with a shra, dili sani, or do they say dili sani? Okay, so like someone told me on Shabbos about kriya mumche from the best valley Korean Flatbush. He told me that someone came over to him last week, not a little shot, the previous week, and he said to him, you know, you said when you're laying at the end of the parasha, parashas Nosoi, midaber elof. The end of the parasha, it says, I forgot the whole pasuk, but my husband's not here yet. Midaber elof.
Shma
hakol, vayishma es hakol, midaber elof. Mitoich. What is it?
Mibein
shnei hakruvim. Like yishma es hakol, midaber elof, mibein shnei hakruvim. So he said to him, you know, when you're laying, he said, midaber, a shva. Look in the Chumash. It's not midaber, it's mi. You have to get a yud. Make believe there's an invisible yud after the man. Midaber elof. He made a mistake. No one corrected you. So he said to him, this is a Balakriya Moya Yusa. He said to him, no, you, I don't know, I don't know exactly. I didn't have the whole thing that he told me. But he said to him, how do you say tzitzis?
Oh, no. Tzitzis.
How do you say, so the first tzadi is not followed by a yud, and the second one is followed by a yud. So the truth is, many years ago, someone taught this, someone showed me that there really is a machlokes rish. Everyone agrees when you have there's a chiruk mole and a chiruk choser. A chiruk means a single dot. And sometimes a single dot is followed by a yud, and sometimes not. When it's followed by a yud, that's a chiruk mole, and when it's not followed by a yud, it's a chiruk choser. the nafkamina is it called a tnuah gedoyla or a tnuah kitana? There's a yud, then it takes longer to say it. If there's no yud, it's no yud, so then there's a whole question how to say it. But the nafkamina, the main nafkamina is, let's say you have a shva on the next syllable, the next letter. Is it a shva no, or is it a shva noch? If it's a chirik mole, then the next letter would be a shva no. If there's no yud, it would be a shva noch. However, there is a machloikis, I don't remember, it's already a while ago, machloikis rishonim. When you don't have a yud, what is the correct pronunciation? So shockingly, it seems that there are valid opinions that hold that the correct way to say a chirik without a yud is identical to a shva. At least for our purposes, because we're not so nuanced in every, you know, all the little details. And that would mean that when it says Vayishma es hakol, there's no yud after the mem, then indeed the way you would pronounce it is Midaber Elof. And that is why many people, if you listen carefully, when they say Kriya Shema, this week's parsha, Parsha Shlach, the parsha of Tzitzis. So that's why, if you listen very carefully, many people, they say Tzitzis. The first Tzadi, they pronounce as a Shva, Tze. The second Tzadi, they pronounce differently because there's a Yud, Tzitzis. But the truth is, most people don't even do that. They just say Tzitzis. They do a double Shva, which is incorrect. That's totally incorrect. Tzitzis. No, you can't say that. Chas v'shalom can say that. Can't say that. But many people, they say tzitzis. I'm not making this up, right? Everyone here, yes, a kid. Tzitzis. Where are your tzitzis? Your tzitzis. It's either tzitzis or it's tzitzis. Tzitzis.
It's American Ivrit.
It's American? Ivrit. American Ivrit? What's American Ivrit? What is that? Okay, but okay, so for some reason we're very lax in this. We say tzitzis. It's not tzitzis, it's tzitzis. Or it's tzitzis. So you have to talk to the medakim. So the truth is interesting, midaberi love, I don't know, the Kabbalik Kridam means to hearing. They say midaberi love. They don't say midaber, they say midaber.
I don't look here what it means here. Midaber means there is a dagesh vadalet because the calf is missing. It's a hit fire. Mitzdaber, it's a yod, so it says
mitzdaber.
But I'm going back here.
Dili son.
There are three pealim here, the binyan PL. The binyan PL has that ayin hapoal has a dagesh.
Okay.
Dili tani, simachta, and then Shivati, all three.
There's a parallel.
PL, there is a dagesh after that. That's what
Dilitani. Simmachta, Shivati. So there's another factor over here, because there's a stop sign. The fact that the Lamed has a dagesh, I have to, this is all heavy duty stuff. I gotta go back to my books. I have a very good safer at home. Very good safer at home that deals with a lot of this stuff. Phenomenal, even those about it say. It's a phenomenal sefer on Dikduk. And Rav Kalman over here is pointing out that over here there's a dot after the Lamed. In the Lamed. So there's a dot in the Lamed, you know, that automatically it creates, the Lamed is a new syllable. And that, I'm wondering if that forces you to pronounce the Dalid as if it's a Chilik Mole, despite the fact that there is no Yud. Even ordinarily, when you would say tzitzis, and the first sadi is a shva, and you pronounce like a shva, but when you have a dot, a dogish in the second letter, that may change the dynamics of the chirik choser. All right, that's just the point. We say this every single day in davening. We have to learn, how to read. You know, it's time to learn how to read. After you retire, you have to learn how to read. You have to learn how to. Do you say dilisani or do you say dilisani? Ask your neighbor. You've been saying this your whole life. How do you pronounce this word? Aroy, Mimcha Hashem ki di li soni or di li soni. How do you say tzitzis or tzitzis? Now this Shabbos, everyone's going to be listening very carefully to the Valkyria when he gets to the last Aliyah, how he says the word tzitzis. Any event?
The spoken language changes.
Okay, the spoken, you're correct.
A Russian cook, he used to call it grilled cheese, not grilled cheese. No, it's a spoken language. It changes.
Correct. You are correct. There's a spoken language. There are many people. If you go to Eretz Yisrael, I haven't heard it all that much. I'm not there, obviously, but people have told me that in Eretz Yisrael, in the Yeshiva, just for the sake of a convention, in the Yeshiva world, there's a very big difference between the way they learn, the language they speak when they learn, and the way they pronounce words when they daven. They daven in lane. When they daven in lane, it's like a whole different pronunciation. And when they learn, the learning is very, it violates all rules. Mele'el, mele'ra, there are certain pronunciation that is not at all according to the rules of Hebrew grammar. Yet when these same people get up to daven for the Amud, and when they lane, many of these B'nai Torah, they lane with such precision. It's spooky. It's really frightening. I'm talking about the real yeshiva. The guys have a thick pace. They're Israelis, and they know this is their language, and they know the real deal. And there was a guy when this 2 weeks ago I was laying, I was supposed to lay that Shabbos, and there was a guest. There was a simcha. There was a guest, and right away when he made the bracha, I said, oh no. This guy, he's the real deal. He was an Eretz Yisrael, and I heard the way he made it, and it was very quick. And he's basically leaning along with me. I'm laying a big aliyah, leaning along with me. And I know he was quiet, he didn't, but I saw the way, he knew the leaning infinitely better than me. And it was second nature. And even if he had a havamina that I was going to say a word, incorrectly, he right away said the word in advance with perfect diction and the most perfect grammar. And then, okay, Baruch Hashem, I survived his aliyah. But he doesn't go away. He stands there on the side for the next aliyah. And that aliyah was massive. That was the biggest aliyah in the whole Torah. He got me twice. I'm sure he didn't like it, I'm sure I didn't like it, he caught me on two. But Mr. Marillus, you're 100% correct. There is the spoken language, and then there is the pronunciation, the way we daven, and the way we lane. And that is for davening, and davening has to be done with precision. And it's not so easy. There are a lot of things.
By the way, I'll tell you where I learned how to read correctly. In Israel, in the early 1940s, 50s, they used to do Kriyat Torah and Haftarah on the radio every Friday afternoon. And I enjoyed it so much. And they took the best Baalei Kriyah in the country. They were reading. And I learned from them how to read.
And absolutely.
I see here, because he says four times the same binyan. In Roman time, binyitani, simachti, shivati, chiyitani. It's the dagesh is the second.
The second letter. There's a pattern. There's a very sophisticated pattern.
This is his style in this spelling.
Absolutely. There's a lot of sophistication. Rabbi Orlian, from YU, he taught Tanakh for almost 60 years, and he showed me, he made these, I don't know how to describe it, charts. He put the Tamei HaMikra in mathematical terms. There are mathematical patterns, and he told me. He looked far and wide. No one did this. I don't know if I have it at home somewhere. It's Kedai to come show me. Like he took a pasuk and he put it into mathematical terms, patterns, to show the sophistication in, you know, the Tami HaMikra and the sentence structures, to reduce it to bare mathematical forms. And as you say, there are very sophisticated patterns that run throughout the entire composition, much more sophisticated than, you know, you'll take a Lahavdil Shakespeare and you'll go through some more events. Anyway, let's go further than Rashi. Rashi over here says, okay, the word olai, Rashi over here is the word li, means a very important word. Li is not the name. What do you mean li? What do you mean li? Isn't that the name of a street in Williamsburg? What does it mean li? You did not allow oivai, you know, you say by harat yukudeshes. It used to be the old days, the Messiah division would say, hare, hare, at, mikudeshes. Zog the street between Bedford and
Marcy.
Say that street, Bedford and Marcy. Lee, good. Weiter. That's how you get married. You gotta know your address. Because you don't want to say me, because you say the word Lee, it sounds like the Masabi Kudush, he's the one that's getting married. How many women can I marry already? Me, my shliach? Marry this woman. You're not looking for trouble to make a woman into a shliach. You did not allow my enemies, allow me to rejoice Lee. So Rashi Lee says Lee is not taking literally, Lee only means a lie. You did not allow my enemies to prevail over me. Kimoy olai. Shahayu oymim, they would say, Ein lo David chelik lo'olam haba, they would say that David has no chelik lo'olam haba. Uchesherau shebishviloi niftichu hadolosais le'aroin. Okay, we discussed this medrash many times. When they saw that the doors miraculously opened, only when they said, Bavur David avdech, when they came to bring the Ark into the inauguration, us then yadu, they knew, Shemocha loy hakadosh baruch hu al oysa avam, that sin, like the bottom of the pot. Now notice over here these words, the Rashi selected this halacha. Call ha'omer David chota, eina eletoya. What does that mean literally? Anyone that says that David was chayte is making a mistake. Really? If David, that means that he never really sinned. If David never really sinned, then how could he say over here shemocha? If you never sinned, there is nothing to forgive. Okay, the fact that it says Shemochal indicates that he did sin. And what is it that ate up his enemies? What ate up his enemies is the fact that Hashem forgave him. Forgiveness. See, it's a fascinating thing that in America today, in the country we live in, there's no such thing as, you know, in politics.
That's right.
In politics,
there's no such thing.
As forgiveness. There's no teshuva. No, in America, we always say it's a very gracious country. If a person was convicted of a crime and you go for a judge, if you don't say you're sorry, you're finished. That's the way it is. A person, Rahman Litzlan, stands before a judge in America. If you say you're defiant, I plead innocent. You plead innocent? You didn't do this crime? They will rip you to shreds. That's the way it goes in America. They will.
Or if
they
you
will.
Said something 20 years ago. It's not possible that you've evolved and matured or regretted.
No, we'll come to that. But there really is a contradiction. It's a contradiction in the way society is structured. And the way the people's attitude, at least the way I see it.
Well, at least from one side of the...
On the one hand, there's no country that's more forgiving than America.
Right.
If a person says to a judge, Chotasi, I made a mistake, you're right, I'm guilty, Chotasi, I'm going to go for, the key word is rehabilitation. You got to say that word. I'm going to go for rehab. I'm going to go for therapy. Rehabilitation. In America, there's an incredible machil, incredible. Incredible forgiveness and understanding. But mitzad sheni, in politics, in the world of politics, if you're an elected official, first of all, the elected official will never, ever, ever say you're sorry. And even if he does say he's sorry, there is no forgiveness. I mean, they're not going to put you in this forgiveness and you won't suffer personally. They won't put you away. But to lead in a position of authority,
position, there's no such thing as forgiveness. There's no such thing. And like you saw over here, you have to try the best that you can to put this in political terms. David has enemies. David committed a crime. He lived with Bathsheba. So his political enemies say, according to the world of politics, as a leader, as a king of a nation, this is unacceptable. He cannot be a role model for the country. A person that commits such a crime, lives with a married woman, under no condition in society can serve as a role model for Klal Yisrael, under no condition. And therefore, David, you can say chatasi all you want, but you can't be melech. You're out. And the Ribbono Shel Olam has spoken and says, I forgive David. I forgive David, and David can go on and he can serve as the melech of Klal Yisrael. This something is impossible to relate to in the modern world that we live in. Impossible. A person commits a crime like this. Now, in America, you'll never hear anyone say chatas. I mean, you'll never hear that. But even if they would, okay, chatasi, we won't put you in jail, but that's it, you're out. Goodbye, good riddance, you're out of the political arena. Goodbye. David remains. The Malchus of David goes on. And David's opponents could not accept this. They could not live this down, that Hashem forgave him, and Hashem allows him to remain as the Melech of Klal Yisrael. Their faces turned black, like the bottom of a pot. Okay, it's hard for us to relate to this. Oz yodu shemoch alech l'shvaruchu al oisa avon v'nepu p'nei tsoyne david k'shule k'deira. Period. V'atir p'ene yu afhil nihi slichas avon word. Now here Rashi over here is waxing homolek. He's saying over here that the word over here, when we learn the pasuk according to the, I think in Rumsus David also, but the pasuk of Shad over here is that David was sick. David was sick most of his life. David was bedridden. People don't know that. People think that David, most of his life, he was out doing politics and running the world. According to Chazal, most of David's life, he was lying, he was fighting for his life. He was in a hospital, fighting for his life. He was, what?
He was fighting wars.
No, that was not most of his life. That was just a small part of his life. Many, many years, Chazal don't have the exact numbers, David was bedridden. He was a very ill person. And so when you'd read these psukim, you would think that over here, that David was describing his physical illness. And yet Rashi says that's not what it means. When it says Vatirpeni, or here refers to David was begging Hashem his whole life, forgive me for the sin, my Avera. And the word Vatirpeni over here means a refuas hanefesh. As we say, when we misfala, we say Hashem refuas hanefesh, refuas haguf. That the person's illness correlates to the sickness in the neshama, the choile in the neshama. He slichas ha'avon kmo v'shav v'rof eloi. Okay, the person does teshuva, and he is forgiven. Next, let's go to the next passage here. Hashem halisa, you have lifted me up in the minshol from the grave nafshi. Chiyisani, you have given me life from your divar. We have over here, Rabbi Sakut, it's hard to compete. We have two words. We have the word Sheol and the word Bar. Sheol, both of these words mean the grave. So Rashi says, Rashi keeps doing miyar divar kumon miri dasi labar, from descending into the pit, shlo ered le gehenim. So Rashi leaves the word Bar means gehenim, and Sheol means the grave. Hashem, you prevented me from going into the grave. That is the Sheol. The pshuta shel mikav Sheol means the grave. And after I get into the grave, they think it's over. It's not over. That's when it first begins. That's when they take my neshama to Gehenim. So therefore, he's saying over here, like, not only did you save me, did you keep me alive, you also save me from going to Gehenim. Next pasuk, Zamar, read the whole page. Zamar l'Hashem chastav, sing to Hashem twice once. V'hoidu give thanks l'zecha kotcho, ki regav yapo, Hashem is angry, it's only momentarily. Chayim b'ritzoinai, v'erem nidin yolim bechay, lo agan, with tears. V'laboyke, we know in the morning there is joy. Let's see this Rashi. Rashi pasukei zamru l'Hashem chasidav al ma she'osali, what you have done for me, ki yicholim atem lachasos bo sheyeti luchem. It's an incredible Rashi. Okay, Rashi over here is revealing. Rashi is revealing over here is that David is asking people to be to use him as inspiration. Okay, to. Okay, David is asking people to use his life, his example, as inspiration. Unbelievable, Rashi says, Alma she'osali, look what happened to me. I did a terrible aver. I live with a married woman, whatever that means. And yet, after all that, Hashem forgave me. Ki yecholim atem lachasois boy, learn from my example. Lo yechota David, ela b'shvil lehoirois teshuva li Yisrael. The only Klal Yisrael only David only is nichshol in order to teach teshuva to Klal Yisrael. You can learn from me that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be good to you. V'afilu atem shurim b'tzar, even if you are in a state of tzar, al tiru, do not be frightened. Kirega kotoin bi'apo, why does Rashi have to ask the word rega kotoin? Okay, what does Rashi come to? Rega kotoin. Ki by Hashem, the answer is very simple. But why does Rashi have to keep for a moment? A moment, because Hashem says ki elef shonim de'einecha ki yoyim esmo. So do the math. Any mathematicians here? Mayor. What? Do the math. If one day is considered 1,000 years, so do the math. What is 1 second by Hashem? Ki elef shonim de'einecha. 1,000 of our years by Hashem, 1,000 of our years by Hashem is one day. So if you do the math, a rega is a long time. You have to do the math. How long would a rega be? How many seconds are there in
4 hours?
More.
4 days?
More. You have to go sit down and do the calculations. But obviously, it's not a second. A rega is a very, from our perspective, is a very, very long time. It may be a whole lifetime. You got to figure out the math. If 1,000 of our years is one day by Hashem, so when you do the math, a second by Hashem, by us, who knows how long that is? So it's saying here, that's why Rashi is coming to say rega, not in your terms, Hashem, rega in my terms. Means mamish, an instant. Hashem, when Hashem gets angry, it doesn't mean Hashem's rega. It means my rega. Your anger is just mamish in my moment. There's a story, there's a person that he gave at his graduation, he said to this professor, he got his PhD, and he was called to give an address, and he said, you know, I want to thank my professor. I'm telling you, professor, there's no one like you. If I was told by God that I only had 1 hour to live, 1 hour to live, you know what I would do? I would want to spend it with you. Not my wife, not my children. The only one I would want to spend that last hour of my life would be with you, my professor. Would you? So everyone was loud. You taught me this knowledge. Got my PhD in university. You taught me. It's incredible. I would want to spend that last hour with you. You know why? You're so boring. 1 hour by you, sitting in class for 1 hour by you, was an eternity. That's how boring you were. A rega can be an eternity. When it's boring, it feels like an eternity. It feels like some amazing one over here when it says ki rega biapo. What does it mean? A rega, a moment. You know, a moment, it's relative to the way you experience that rega. When you experience the rega with joy, it goes by, it's a fleeting moment. If it's not a pleasant experience, the rega, it could be only one moment. A person who does go to the doctor, the agony of just being there for a few moments can feel like a month. sitting in a waiting room to talk to someone. You can feel like, how long were you there in the waiting room for? 5 minutes. 5 minutes. You go, you waste the whole day. You go on, those 5 minutes were agonizing. So in WWE it says, Kirega biapo, Hashem is angry. Just because it's a rega, that one rega, the agony of a rega, can do a job on a person to no end. So Rashi says, rega koton, don't worry, this rega you're not going to feel. You're not going to feel the agony. Okay, so we're giving over here two perushim is what Rashi's coming to with the word koton. Either koton means on our terms, not on your terms. Because like Kadosh Baruch Hu, ki elef shonim be'einecha ki yom esmol. Number two, even if it's on our terms, there's a very big difference the way a person experiences the rega. Even a rega can be torture, can be a struggle, can get who knows how long. Now you see people, they said, go, tircha dit zibur. You come to shul, if you're not goylo, the Sefer Torah, oh, tircha dit zibur. Tell me, how long does it take to be goylo the Sefer Torah? 20 seconds, 30 seconds, or Baruch over here, he never missed his entire life being goylo the Sefer Torah. Correct, or Baruch? 40 years you were gabbai, it never happened. You were not goylo the Sefer Torah, it was tircha dit zibur. How long does it take you to goylo the Sefer Torah? If you're, it does take so long. After davening is over, what do? They sit in shul, they schmooze, talk lashon hara, drink coffee for an hour, and they take a very slow stroll going home. I understand. When it came to the Sefer Torah, the whole thing took 20 seconds, and you went berserk. You lost your mind. You go, yeah, you see, they finished on Eshrei. Nu. Baruch. What's the rush? Where are you going? You're tired. Where are you going? Tircha de tzibura. Amcha yeshol tshichim parnas. Where are you going? Tircha de tzibura. Tircha de tzibura. What's the difference between going, antagonizing the Baal Tefillah? If you don't say nu, he'll start the Chazar Sashatz 30 seconds later. If you say nu, you chap to rhyme 30 seconds. Tircha de tzibura. When davening is over, how much time do you sit in shmooze and waste to go home? At least 45 minutes. So was it kedai to get the guy angry and go nu, and now he has a grudge against you, you save yourself 30 seconds because of tircha de tzibura, and you really don't care about time anyway, because look how you spend the going home from shul, how you leisurely make your way home. What's the answer? It's not the time. It's in the mind. Tircha de tzibura is a perception. It's in the mind. It's in the mind. It's a concept in the mind. Kirega biapo. Just because it's only a rega, it's torture. It's torture. Rashi says, when it says here the word rega, it means it's not torture. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not looking to torture you. He's not out to get you. I read recently, very profound. Who is this person? Big person, one of the people associated with those books of living with Emuna. Living with Emuna, and so he said he was the Hebrew version. I don't know. So he says that when he started doing his work of speaking publicly and trying to give people chizuk, he discovered that everyone that he talks to has incredible emunah in Hashem. They have no seikas. He's not dealing with. There are people that, unfortunately, they're not believers. Everyone he knows has rock solid emunah in the Ribbono Shel Olam. The only problem is they're thoroughly convinced that Hashem is out to get them. Hashem is out to get you. I believe in Hashem. I have no doubt there's a God. I have no doubt about that. I see Him. I'm mamish. I see Hashem wherever I go. But the problem is, Hashem likes some people, and some people He's out to get.
This person,
he knows, he comes across literally thousands of people, and he evaluates them, and their condition is, they're ma'aminim 100%. But they're also 1,000% convinced that God is out to get them. And His message to them is, He's not out to get you. He's not. He's Adarav. He's out to help you. He's here to do with you chesed, to build you up. Just you have to recalibrate your focus. And he said it's pretty easy, because once people are maminin, and their condition is just they just think Hashem is out to get them. So to recalibrate them that Hashem is not out to get you, it's not as hard as dealing with people that are in denial, that they are not maminin. It's a whole different approach to dealing with people when you understand their condition. You cannot treat a person until you know his condition. And when you know the condition is, he's a maimon, and he has even maybe more muna than you, than the doctor, than the therapist. The only problem is, he thinks God's out to get him. Oh, you know your enemy, you know what you're dealing with. It's a whole different story. David over here says, Kirega Hashem is not out to get you. It's rega kotoy. The experience is very, very short. The Biapo in his anger, Chaim, the son of the Chaim, Aruchim Yesh Behero Tsoisoi. There is Chaim Arukim. I have someone in the Chaim, his name is Yeshua Gofsky. He's an incredible Baal Diktuk. He does the whole Chaim Olin journal from cover to cover. Every year he does the whole journal. He writes the whole journal because most people don't even want to write ads. They just send in, you write the ad for me. So he writes all the ads, he edits the ads, he does all the grammar. That journal, you start every single yeshiva, they have it on, in the office on the shelf as the gold standard. It really is, because they go through it, Chaim Olin, especially him, it's really all his work. He goes through it with a fine comb. And he always tells me, it's not Chaim Aruchim, it's Chaim Arukim. He always tells that to me. It's Chayim Arukim. There's a dot in the Chaf. Does anyone ever say that? I never heard anyone say that. Everyone says Chayim. He's the Gram. We should get him to come here one day, give a shir to us on Chayim Arukim. So look at this rock.
What is it doing there?
That's the way. Look at Artskol. Artskol. Look. They just struggle over here. Look at Rashi. The Rashi on Kirega Katoin Be'apo Chayim Birtzaynai. The Chayim Arukim just caught my attention over here. That's the proper grammar. The proper grammar is to put a dot in the chof. Chayim Arukim. We have to get him to tell us that.
All right.
How do you call a tall person? Aruch or Aruk? Tall guy.
I don't know. Maybe really it should be called Aruk. I don't know. Aruk. I don't know the answer. I don't know grammar. I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say.
The vowel should not be there.
The what?
In the Arukim, there is no vav. Aruchim, there is vav.
I don't know anything. I don't know. He always tells me. He tells me Chaim Arukim. He tells me it's Arukim, not Aruchim. It just caught my attention here. Looking over here, the article here it says V'Chaim Arukim. Yesh beherot soisoi uvihi poisoi. When you appease Hashem, when a person does teshuvah, he is zoichet to this bracha. Let's finish up. Look at me. The next pesuk over here. Vani amati b'shalai said, my tranquility. Bal emot li'ilam will not fall to Hashem b'ritzoncha through your rotzoin. Hamarta lahariyos, you have established my mountain as a stronghold. But histarto fonecha, when you concealed yourself, when you see me fall, I was terrified. We spent a lot of time in this passage in the first round. My bet's abedami. What benefit is there in my death? Beriditi el shachas when I descend into Gehenna. Remember, this is the third word. This is the third word for death. We had the word before sheol, then we had the word bor, and now we have the word shachas. Okay, three different words to describe what happens afterwards. Will my dust acknowledge you? Hear my prayers and show me, be gracious to me. Hashem heye oizer li. You have transformed my mourning into dancing. You have opened up my sackcloth. I'm good with joy. So that my soul shall sing to you. And not be silent. This is another word for death. This is a fourth word for death. Yidoyim. Yidoyim means to be silent. Death is a moment of silence. So we have already four words to allude to death. Bor, Shachas. Oh, I missed the first one. What was the first one? The first one is Sheol. Sheol, Bor, Shachas, and now we have Yidoim. So my neshama shall sing to v'lo yidom Hashem elokai le'oil v'deka. Let's finish the Rashi's. Rashi going back and pasuk zayin yudbeis. Va'ani amarti v'shalvi. I said in my tranquility when I was in the mokum of shalom. The word shalvi is a very interesting word. V'shalvi. Shalvi, what's the shorish of the word shalvi? Shalva. So what's the shorish of the word shalva? Shalom? Shalom? Where does the word shalva come from? Shalva. Shalva. Shalva is not the same. Is it really shalom? Is it really shalom? Is it really the same as shalom? The word shalva?
Contraction of shalom.
Is it? I'm not so sure. Peace is not necessarily the same as shalva. Gotta look at this. Let's see Rashi. Rashi really says, "V'shalvasi chayisi chayshev v'loy emel yolam." In the state of I'm not so sure. You have to see if it's the same word. The word shalom and shalva. Who says it's the same? Obviously, it's a relationship, but it's not necessarily the same. "V'shalvasi chayisi chayshev v'loy emel yolam." We discussed this when a person, part of davening is a person should prepare for the future. You have to prepare for the future. "Al tashlicheni le'eis zikna." Okay, it's inevitable. Zikna is inevitable. It's just a matter of time passing. Time passing. You have no control over time. There is no way in the world a person can stop time. A person, if he's merits to live to old age, chayim arukim, he will become old. There's no way you can stop that from happening. Yet zchus, it's a tremendous zchus to make it to that point in time. Mm-hmm. And a person when he's young and is healthy has to be mispalel that when he gets to that state he should be vibrant, he should be productive, he should have accomplished, because it's inevitable. You can't deny that's going to happen.
The father said the word is atashvicheni, that's it. At the end of gradually, you know, it's fine. But sometimes the young man is already old. Ooh. Because he's sick and he has problems. And al tashlicheni.
Don't cast me. Wow. Okay, very, very good. Don't push me into it prematurely. Al tashlicheni, don't push me. Don't throw me into old age prematurely. The posh of shot is don't abandon me. But the real literal translation is don't bring it upon me prematurely. Don't bring up old age upon me prematurely. Wow, it's a very powerful idea. That there's an illness, I don't know what it's called, a Rahman with some terrible, terrible illness where a person ages, by the time he's 5 years old, he's already like 50 years old. It's the name of a certain disease. It's a horrible, horrible disease. But a person ages prematurely, it's mamish like al-tachik, to a certain degree, person has difficulties in life, he can be pushed into old age prematurely. So you're saying a very profound translation, never thought of this. Al tashlicheni le'eis zikna, don't bring it upon me before it's time. Through, and how does that happen? Rachmana l'slan, through difficulties, that life is difficult. Okay, fine, well, I'm going to go shalvi, I imagine, I'm never going to falter. I'm going to be strong and secure my entire life. Avol ein hadavah b'rishus, it's not in my power. Ki im b'rishusoy shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. B'ritzoynoy, he's saying, what we are saying is that life is not in your rishus. It's not in your power. It's in Hashem's rishus as is what's going to be at the end. Hashem yu ha'amid es hariri, my mountain. What is Hari? It's a metaphor as Gidulah, see my greatness. Lidiyois ois. Okay, the word Hari means my Gidulah, my stature in life, to be powerful. The Kevin Shahistir upon of many. The moment when you hid yourself, Miyad Hayisi Nifalam was terrified. The Ekra Elach, I cried out to you, Hanan, Tomin. Continuously. Leymar Lefonecha, Mabet Sabidami. I continuously said to you, Hashem, don't abandon me. What benefit is there going to be if you abandon me? The Atosh Amato Koli, you listened. Hashem is a very good listener. Halavai, we should be such good listeners. The Afachtan, this Dila Machli, you have transformed my Hesper to dancing. Pitachta, okay, Pitachta, Machol, you want to give us some insight into this word? Pitachta, you have opened.
It says Al-Lachas, which he says means to release.
To release. And Rashi has something that is explosive. Kimo, Vayefatach, Vayefatach, Hagimalim. What does it mean in that passage? They were muzzled.
He untied the camels.
No, is that what it means?
That's what
okay, but I don't know how accurate that is. Who did this? Rivka. Vayefatach
hagemalim. That's not what he said.
So what isn't the pause referring to Rivka?
He untied.
He untied. Okay, so Einachanam, you have to go back and study the Pesukim. But I always thought in my limited knowledge is that Vayefatach hagemalim means the camels were muzzled. I think Rashi there says. Why? They should not graze in the fields of other people. So the camels were muzzled. So he took off the muzzle off their mouth. So when it says over here, Pitachta Saki, if you want to go and wax homiletic, and I think there's a lot of truth to this, is when we say Saki, what does Saki mean? Sackcloth, right? Sackcloth.
Yeah.
So sackcloth you wear on your body.
Yeah, when we talked about this before, the thought occurred to me that if you wear sackcloth close to the skin, it you suffer.
Okay.
Whereas if you loosen it,
so it's not rubbing against your skin.
So much with the skin.
Is there a principle, is there a possibility that the word saki refers to something on your mouth? There is some irritation in your mouth that prevents it. What is sackcloth? We have to discover the exact translation of the word saki. Many words in Tanakh are borrowed terms. So you just hit the nail on the head, Rav Michal, and you said that the problem, what is this strange thing? You wear sackcloth? What is sackcloth? What is it? It's goat hairs?
Very rough material.
A rug from goat hairs? Is that what it's from? Goat hairs? And you put it on your body, and what did you just say? You said it's something which irritates. It is an irritation. It is an object which irritates your body. Now, I don't know, I didn't prepare well enough, but it's a worthy study to find exactly the literal meaning of the word sack. Mordechai put on sack v'efer yutza l'rabim. Sack. So we like to translate. We're brought up. It's etched in our heads. It means sackcloth. Good, got some goat skins, and you put it on your body. You ever see when they have a fast day in Eretz Yisrael, they have charedim to wear, they go to the kosel, they actually wear sat, they wear this. They put on their body goat skins, and to irritate the flesh, the tzar. But it's very bizarre, we discussed this. There's a medrash, we're not going to do this again, we're going to have to go tomorrow to the next mizmor, but we had a whole discussion, what does this pasuk mean here? There's hespit, mispidi, Misbidi, Pitachta Saki, and you took off you transformed my Hesper to dancing, Pitachta Saki. How does the end of the pasuk parallel the beginning of the pasuk? So I'm now, based upon this Rashi, trying to suggest to you, which is probably not correct, but it's worthy of I believe it, it's worthy of study, is that the word Saki here doesn't refer to sackcloth per se. It refers to some type of impediment of speech. Person over here, the pasuk begins, you have transformed my misbeit. Misbeit means a eulogy, a hesped. On a yom of simcha, you're not allowed to deliver hespedim. Hespedim is not something you do with your body. It is something you do with your mouth. A person stands and he speaks and he brings forth emotion through the koyach of dibur. A person is not able to... A person who wants to praise Hashem but is unable to do so because there's something in his mouth. There is something that is holding back his expression, his koyach hadibur. How do we know that this we're on to something? Because Rashi goes out of his way to quote the pasuk Vayifatach Hagimalim. And there the Pshuta Shel Mikra means there's some impediment on the mouth of the gomel. The gomel's mouth is muzzled. Now there it's muzzled, it's not permitted to eat. But in this context, a person is unable to express himself. So Hashem, you opened up my dibur, my koyach ha-dibur, and gave me the ability to express words of joy. Instead of expressing words of hesped, of eulogy, and pain, you gave me the ability of pitachta saki, you opened up the element in my life that irritated my ability to express myself, vata azereni simcha, but instead girded my koyach hadibur with joy. Why else would Rashi quote the pasuk vayifatach hagam alef? Everything over here, knows this mizmor is all about expressions of joy. One thing that I left out, I wanted to mention, is over here crying, the tears. Tears, yolim bechis. I saw it in one of the sfarim I used to prepare, which is something very, very fascinating. It says when a person is crying, that prevents him from speaking, from talking. Never thought about this. When a person, what do the eyes have to do with the mouth? Nothing. I can close my eyes and I can talk. I can close my eyes, I can laugh. I can close my eyes and sing. You have to try this in a good way. When a person is crying, when there are tears coming from a person's eyes, the tears coming from the eyes prevent the mouth from talking. Does that make any sense? But that's a reality. It's like sneezing. When a person sneezes, when you sneeze, it's your throat and your mouth and your nose. When a person sneezes, what is happening? There's something going on in his throat, something going on in his mouth, something going on in his nose. Does this have anything to do with your eyes? Does a sneeze have anything? Yes, nothing. The eyes are the eyes. It's one part of the body. There's a nose, there's a mouth, and there's a throat. Can a person sneeze when he's walking? Of course. When a person is moving his hands, can you sneeze? Oh, when you sneeze, it is impossible, medically impossible to keep your eyes open. My in shmita etzel har Sinai. Why? That's the way Hashem made it. That's the way Hashem made the person. That when a person sneezes, his eyes close. That's the way the person's brain is wired. I don't know anything more than that, but that's a reality. A healthy person, when he sneezes, his eyes close. Maybe it's linked to the Medrash, that in ancient times, when people died, how did they die? They sneezed. You sneeze, you close your eyes. Closing your eyes, Yosef, Yoshis, Yodoy, Aleinu. When a person dies, is.
To bring a right to your swara here, of that it has to do with speaking, the Tashkazaki, the next possible.
I will not be silent. But let's finish this point over here. When a person sneezes, his eyes close. In ancient times, before people got sick, that's how a person would die. He would sneeze, his eyes close. Dead. So even though today a person lives on, and that's why you say Gesundheit, Asusa, every language, just want to fasten and Google it, every single language has a different expression that you say to a person when he sneezes. It goes back to the time of Adam Rishon, before people got sick. When a person would sneeze, death. Person sneezes and he's still alive, Techiyas HaMeisim. It's a good simon when a person sneezes. Because it means Hashem is giving a person a second chance. It's the element of Techiyas HaMeisim. The eyes close. Same thing. The reverse. When a person tears are coming out of a person's eyes, it prevents the mouth from opening. Isn't that amazing? The same way when the person sneezes, the eyes automatically shut. When tears, is the reverse. Reverse engineering. When tears are flowing out of a person's eyes, when there's a secretion of tears, that secretion of tears prevents the koyach hadibur coming forth.
Babies can do it. Babies can do it.
Tears? No. When babies, they're not really crying. Most babies, not tears. There's a different type of crying. A baby, when the baby cries, the baby is not tearing, he's not really crying.
Just whining.
He's just saying, where's my food? This is a hotel, 5-star hotel, where's my food? Mm-hmm. When a baby tears, there are no words. Okay, it's a cry, there's no chitach adibor. It prevents in the mind, reverse engineering. That is why this entire mizmar is where David is complaining about dibor. The koyach adibor. L'man yizamercha chavoy. Sing. Aromimcha Hashem. And not chas v'shalom the other way around. Bo'erev yolin bechi. In the evening I couldn't talk. Because when there's tears, there's no dibor. But v'la boiker, Rina. Rina and bechi are mutually exclusive. Okay, we're not doing this, but there's a medrash that darshens the entire mizmar in reference to Mordechai and Esther.
Right.
We already spent the whole mizmar on that. Chav Beis. Keli, Keli, Lama Azatani, so we're not going to do it over here. Vani Amarki Vishalvi, Omar Haman. Haman said this. Haman, Vani Amarki Vishalvi, Baal En, Moili, Oilam, Haman, the Nazis, Yemach Shemam, Zichram, the Reich, that's going to last for 1,000 years. That's what it means. Baal Em Moili Oilam. Hitler Yamach Shemoy Vizikro said exactly the same thing. Vani Amarti Vishalvi, Baal Em Moili Oilam. The Reich of 1,000 years. Eilecha Hashem Ekro. Esther said, Eilecha Hashem Ekro V'el Hashem Eschanan Mabetza Abidami. What benefit will there be to a world without Klal Yisrael, and all of the Shema Hashem Nechonim, and indeed Hashem has transformed our Hesped. We're here today. Am Yisrael Chai. Eilech Hashem Ekro, Omer Esther, Ad Hei Hashem Oizeli, Mafachim Nisim Lumachali, who said this last passage, this last Pesukim, Omar Mordechai, the Holy Yisrael. Mordechai was the one who led Klal Yisrael in saying, you have transformed our Hesped into dancing, so therefore there are three parts to this mizmah according to this medrash. The first part is Haman. The second part is Esther. She lech kinois es kol ha-yehudim. And then were results. The results were of Mordechai and Klal Yisrael. They sang the Shira of Fachter Mizmah. Okay, well, somebody need to take a short, very short break. It's very late, we're all the time today. That's a dollar show. We had that in the Mitzvah. That we'll discuss. We're going to Yosef. Yosef, okay, we'll take a short break.
Mordechai was talking, he was dressed in sock.